£50,000, which is paper red. So I didn't know which Joe was.
This is me. I think at the moment, it's really just to provide information to the pension board of the planned work by the external auditors for the pension fund. This report was presented to the council's audit committee in February, and basically it's really provided here to give you as board members assurances of the level of coverage that the audit will give in terms of accounting records, in terms of data, in terms of governance issues, to show that we are complying and the auditors will be checking and giving you assurances around the controls that are in place. I don't think there's anything necessarily. There are risks identified on F13, section 2 of the report, audit risks, which are not necessarily specific to the Isle of Wight Council Pension Fund. I mean, obviously, the ongoing pensions regulator review on F15 is what's in our confidential papers around the communications and the members' data, which is the historic data issues that we've just spoken about. So those are the two really specific items. But again, this year, I think we can close those as audit issues. And the others are standard risks, effectively, of any organisation that is audited that has a risk of management saying, actually, I don't want you to do it this way, I want you to do it that way.
I was just wondering on F9, when it talks about the overview of the strategy, it talks about risks of manipulation of investment valuation and income, and it just says more focused risk this year. I just wonder why, what was the reasoning for that?
I don't
know. I think this is something that's been generated from the Financial Reporting Council down to the auditors, so for them to focus on that area. That's the only reason I can say that the way we actually present our valuation of the assets is the same as this year as it was in prior years. So I don't have any issues with that at all.
I mean, the only thing could be with the advent of pooling and transition. For us, it's not a risk this year because we haven't transitioned anything last year in 2018-19. But pooling became operational, and so there could be differences. Well, there will be differences in investment reporting and investment valuation methods potentially. So
the other thing that might be will come to light is that with the advent of the increased cost transparency for the investment managers, that these are costs that have historically been hidden. So we haven't had them identified. Now we have them identified to us, we are obliged to show them separately, which means we have to adjust the net position doesn't change. We have to adjust the change in market value. That's doesn't change the overall valuation. No. It's just the
analysis behind it. So that could be
the transparency, there's more transparency, and the risk was always there, but it was hidden because there wasn't the transparency, so it wasn't considered before.
Yeah, the actual valuation is the assets are valued by we use the valuation of our custodians, so they are an independent third party, so it's not, and we reconcile that back to our fund managers, so we sort of are using two sets of data and making sure they do tie up, which they do, and the ones where they have a market value, it's very easy for them to be valued because they're valued at the market rate as at the 31st of March.
But I think it is a combination of the pooling and the transparency where there will be more granular information and more scope for
scrutiny.
Yes.
Yeah.
Could I ask something?
Yes, Reg.
I didn't ask this at the audit committee. Well, I didn't say I didn't read.
I wasn't here, but that's fine.
I was there.
I was in New York.
When these fund managers come, the come give us all the talk, don't they? All these lovely graphs and all that, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. They got a benchmark, it's usually 2.5%, 3.5%,
mm-hmm.
and they sit there and they say, we'll approve above the benchmark, and they do, they give it all, you believe them because they say it's above the benchmark. But it's usually big 4% you're talking, aren't they? A bit more, a bit less. Anyway, when you look at the figures here, my work, they say it's more.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite sure. Right, roughly 562 million.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That brings you back 14 million.
Yep.
That's 2.5%.
Yep.
So where's the benchmarks of 3.5%, or 4% above the benchmark?
Right.
But
there are.
They reckon
the
investing our money for more than 2.5% when they come.
No, what we have the target is there is a benchmark that's set. So the FTSE 100 share index,
yeah.
for example, they will outperform that benchmark
exactly.
by 2%.
2%.
Right. So if the benchmark is that the benchmark fell by 2.5%.
The benchmark is set.
No, the benchmark is the movement. So benchmark is we will perform at the level of the FTSE 100 index.
But when you read them presentations and all that lovely glossy magazines,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it never says benchmark 2.5% or less.
No, it does.
It's always above.
No. It's not.
I'll look through.
It's not, Red. It's not. If you look at our Majedi report.
Majedi's another one. They'll do 2% above the benchmark.
Yeah.
So, how come at the end of the day, it's only time. Plus, they've taken how many million out for their own.
But Reg, the FTSE stock market, the FTSE stock exchange has fallen this year.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're giving us 2% above the benchmark, which means if the benchmark has lost 6%, and Majedi have lost 4%, that's really good.
On average, all funds have underperformed last
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
If you look at 5-year returns, you know they've all performed. But if you look at the last year, they've underperformed.
But also, Reg, though, to be honest, this is income. So this is dividend payments.
Yeah.
You don't always get.
For.
No, we employ them for capital growth
yeah.
rather than income. So capital growth is the benchmark movement, but this is, you know. A company isn't obliged to pay out a dividend. So if a company doesn't pay a dividend, we won't get that income.
But
we'll get the capital growth.
They're going to do this and do that with your money, don't they?
Yeah.
If they just said to you, well, you give me all your £1 million and the fees and all the rest of it, and I'll get you 2.5% for it, I think you'll think twice.
But what you have to do is look at their performance across everyone else's performance, because they might have underperformed what they said they were going to, but they might be better.
I'll swallow that one. On F28,
yes, Reg,
there's a typo.
Is there?
Yeah, it says, well, it might be my English, it says, in the first bit, planning stage, all relationships between the new, your favorite, what's with the for?
The what?
You see what I mean?
Yes,
there
is time.
Between the you, your affiliates and directs.
Yes, right. Yeah, stuck a B in.
It should be the between you.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many hundred thousand does that cost?
We don't pay them by word, right?
Cut the grand off of that.
I think we should.
But what it does, it always makes us feel better when we find the auditors have made a mistake.
Yeah, I know. There used to be a guy in here called Roger Mazilius. He used to look for typos.
That's the second time his name's... Oh, I see it, yeah. That's the second time his name's come up today.
You say to Mike, Fisher, put some typos in, just keep him happy.
That's what we do for the pension fund accounts, isn't it, Joe? We miss out a full stop every now and then just to give the auditors something to find.
I try not to.
So really, just to give you reassurance that the controls are being looked at and this is the level, and what we will do as part of the the audit process is we will provide you with an update report as by the time we have the next meeting, which is on the 18th of June, the auditors will have finished. So we will have we won't have a necessarily a formal report from them, but we'll be able to give you an update on where we are.
Because we should have a closed meeting.
And then when we get the formal report that comes through, we'll obviously share that with you.
Lovely.
To again give you that reassurance.
Just a very quick question on fees. Was
they went down. Yes, there are. Yes.
So, was that last year they were high for a reason, or for some reason they've just reduced the fees? I just was curious.
The fees have been consistent at around 21,000 for a number of years, and I think they're set nationally.
Right.
So public standards, public sector audit appointments, publish fee scales, and because we're fab, and we give them really good work scales, work papers and things.
We have to do most of the work for them now.
Yes.
So we
as you know. Don't get anything for free, Tracy.
No, definitely not. Okay, thank you. So then I think on to point 9, which is automatic re-enrolment. And we've got paper G for that one.
Yeah, this is just an update to the board for ensuring compliance with legislation and regulations effectively. Automatic re-enrolment is an employer function, so it is a function of the council rather than a function of the pension fund.
Yeah.
But obviously it has a big impact on pensions administration and our data record keeping. Automatic re-enrolment is to encourage everybody to save into a pension for their retirement, and every 3 years we have to enrol every eligible employee within the fund, within the council's employ, into the pension fund, take a month's pension contribution from them, and then if they opt out, which they can do any time after the 1st of May, or for the June, their contribution will be refunded to them. So it's a complete issue in terms of making sure that we communicate thoroughly to people beforehand that this is going to happen, that we maintain the correct records, and that we receive an act on opt-out forms thereafter. So just wanted to reassure you that it is in hand. Communication is ongoing. We have done a number of messages in our internal newsletter, The Vine. External employers that are not part of the council will have your own automatic staging date. I don't know when yours is, Tracy.
January. Yeah.
So the college will be doing their automatic enrolment, which again will impact on the pensions admin team. But so we'll need to be aware that that happens. So really, just to say, we're doing it. We are communicating. We have published as much information as possible. We intend to report that we have done it, and at some point the intention would be to look at reasons for opt-out. So I kind of struggle to understand why somebody wouldn't want to be in the local government pension scheme, because it's a very good scheme, the benefits are really good, and there is a huge contribution from the individual employer on top of the contribution that you make as a member. So, I mean, I can understand it in terms of financial cost and budget pressures at home. But what we want to try and understand is if there is a reason, and if there is a generic reason in terms of I don't understand what the benefits are, I don't see the point, there's no, you know, I don't understand it, then obviously we've got some communication issues that we can look at. If it's a national issue in terms of affordability, there's also the 50-50 section, which we could again say, have you considered this, or I didn't know about that, or let's work on our publication. And if there are things around national, we can feed that back into the National Scheme Advisory Board, and perhaps that can be taken somewhere else in terms of affordability. So,
yeah, because I always wonder about 50-50, because the uptake's quite low, isn't it? And people don't realise that is another option, I guess.
Yeah, so I think, again, you know, as part of the output of this, we will be trying to understand a little more about our membership and why they've opted out, and then learn lessons from that in terms of comms and things like that. But feedback to you to the board for an interest as well as a communications process as well.
I know a couple of years ago when I was still working, one of my colleagues He said he wasn't in the pension scheme. He just said he couldn't afford to. He says his finances were so tight, he couldn't. Mm. I mentioned the 50-50 scheme, and he said it still wasn't viable.
Yeah.
Anyone that I've talked to, it's the same.
Yeah.
It's usually just that they're struggling to pay the bills.
Which is, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, you can't force people to be members. But again, I think it's if we can understand some of those issues and, you know, some of the affordability issues, it's not something we can deal with as a fund, but we can pass them up nationally. So that there may be something that the Scheme Advisory Board, whose role is to advise government on policy, could potentially look at in terms of restructure. It's a long shot. It's a long shot, but, you know.
He was on quite a bit more than minimum wage, but he still couldn't cope.
Yeah, so, I mean, but it's useful to understand our membership, and I think it's another one of those things that we've not really been particularly good at in the past. Of understanding what the circumstances are of some of our members. There's no obligation for people to tell us why they want to opt out. So I think we were going to look at potentially doing a targeted questionnaire of those people that actively opted out from this exercise to perhaps just understand if there's anything we as a fund can do or if there's anything that we would need to lobby potentially nationally for.
Was it up to about the 1980s? You had to enrol in the scheme.
I don't know. I think potentially. I don't think you've ever had to. I think it's only recently that the government are saying it's automatic enrolment unless you opt out.
Sorry, somebody opted out on principle. They just didn't like it.
Well, more fool them. Is all I can say. But you know, it's just to let you know that these are the sorts of things that could impact on our data and on our admin team's workloads.
So then we're, I think, on to...